Our next presentation is entitled Control of Explosive Zones and Oxygen Penetration in Longwall Gobs Through Nitrogen Injection. The author is Dr. Jürgen Brun. Dr. Brun is a research professor in the Mining Engineering Department at the Colorado School of Mines. Dr. Brun earned his academic training both in the United States and in Germany. He served with NIOSH prior to joining CSM in January of 2012. He also has an extensive set of industrial and commercial experience. Let's welcome Dr. Jürgen Brun.
Let's see here. Thank you for the introduction, John, and good afternoon, everyone. Again, I'm Jürgen Brun. I've been working on this project on looking at the air quality and the air movements in longwall gobs since I joined Colorado School of Mines. This is a project that has been funded by NIOSH, and it's been started by my predecessor, John Grubb, at the School of Mines in 2010, and I've taken over in probably about a year ago. Also, I would like to acknowledge my co-authors on this presentation, Greg Borgin, Rich Gilmore, John Grubb, John Moritz, and Saqib Saki. What I would like to talk about is first the research goals, the goals of the research project. Then I want to go over the description of the numerical model and some of the assumptions that we made in modeling the airflows in the gobs. I want to go over the validation of this model and then talk about how hazardous gas mixtures can be formed in longwall gobs. And then in the second part of the presentation, I will talk about what we can do about mitigating these explosion hazards through injection of nitrogen and also through changing the external ventilation parameters. Let's see, do we have a, oh, here it is. The goals of this research project were to model the longwall panel, the rock mechanics of the longwall panel, of the collapsed rubble inside the longwall gob to establish the airflow resistance of this longwall gob. And then to get into the next stage, modeling with computational fluid dynamics, that's longwall panel. We started out with a sealed longwall panel, so it's one that's not bleeder ventilated. It's completely sealed all the way around. We have a couple of those here in this country, and most of those mines also operate with nitrogen inertization. And they also have gob ventilation boreholes, so those give us additional monitoring points. We validated the model utilizing available measurements. Some of the mines that we're working with are using two bundle systems to continuously sample the air quality behind the seals. And of course, we can also sample the active part of the mine. We can take readings there of air quantity and air quality, methane content, and carbon monoxide content if it's there. The model will help us identify explosive zones based on the mixture between oxygen and methane. And lastly, it was also a goal of the project to establish partnerships with operating mines so that we can validate the model and work with those mines to minimize the hazards that stem from having explosive concentrations or too much oxygen. If you have a gob that is prone to spontaneous combustion, then you want to also limit the amount of oxygen that's available in the gob. We started out with a sample mine. This is the about last 700 feet of longwall panel. The panel is about 1,000 feet wide, and again, this extension is about 700 feet. That's the area that's most interesting, so that's what we modeled. We have on the head gate here, part of the head gate, gate road structure. And since this was the final position of the longwall panel, we also had some recovery chutes here that were ventilated. And on the tailgate side, we had certain measuring points where we assessed air quality. And again, nitrogen was injected in by the headgate on the headgate side, in by the face through several of these inlets. And as well on the tailgate side, we were able to pump in nitrogen here and possibly further through those seals. And the gob and boreholes, as typical, were on the positioned on the tailgate side. So we were able to draw gas samples, primary methane samples, out of these gob and boreholes and assess the model validity. Typically, in a longwall that is subsiding, you have several areas of subsidence. You have a fractured zone where, or you have a caved zone where everything basically turns to rubble. That's where most of your gas flow in the longwall gob is. And then above this rubble zone, you have a caved zone, and often you have a rider coal seam that serves as a methane zone, a methane source from which methane can seep into this gob. And then further above that, you have a bending zone where the strata bends, and basically all the way to the surface it drops, where we observe subsidence on the surface. In order to get an idea what the permeability and the airflow resistance of this rubble zone is, we used a rock mechanics modeling program called FLAC3D, and that helped us to assess the porosity, and then have it reversed here, first the porosity and then the permeability inside the gob. And we could then determine the potential for flow of gases in this rubble zone and also in the overlying strata. And we then developed a pattern of permeability or resistance. This is what I refer to as the bathtub curve. It looks kind of like a bathtub. At the startup end of the longwall panel, in the corners, we have very low permeability, basically large openings. And the deeper you get into the center of this longwall gob, you get very low permeabilities. Very little gas flows inside, but you will have gas flows around the edges of this bathtub. The higher the bathtub, the lower the permeability, and the more gas can flow in these zones along the edges of these gobs. When you look at it from the top, again, this is the final position of the panel. These are your recovery chutes. I turned this picture around because I wanted to show the entire gob. The darker colors here show there's very little, in fact, close to 0% resistance, where in the edge zones along the high rims of the bathtub, in these red and orange and yellow areas, you have very high permeabilities. That's where the gas flows. You see in this first 1,000 feet or so of the gob, that's where most of the interest is focused, because that's where we have oxygen ingress from the face, and that's where we have potentially explosive mixtures. If you look at a cross-section, this is a cross-section, a vertical cross-section of the model. This is the tailgate, and these are the entries. That's actually the pillar here. This is a bit mislabeled here. The entries should be this and this one. In this particular mine, we observed a void that stretched far in by the tailgate. So we modeled that, and that also serves as a conduit for gas flow and for oxygen ingress into the gob. The GOB zone, the rubble zone, is modeled as the bottom 43 feet, and then the layer above that, about 130 feet or so, that's the fractured zone that is modeled with a different different permeability coefficient. And again, in this case, we had a methane inlet about 170 feet or so above the coal seam, a 6-foot layer of coal that was serving as an inlet for methane. To validate the model, we looked at the quantity and gas and concentration readings at various network evaluation points. As I said before, at this particular mine, we had a network of two bundles that would continuously draw samples from behind the seals in by the face. So we had these samples that we could analyze for oxygen, nitrogen, CO, CO2, and methane. We also had the same gases that we analyzed in the GOB ventilation boreholes. We also assessed the flow in those boreholes. And then, in addition, NIOSH conducted tracer gas studies at this particular mine that we were able to utilize, again, for validating the computational fluid dynamics model. In the GOB gas plausibility studies, we used a simple coloring scheme. We looked at both the oxygen concentration. You know, this shows a sample plot of the oxygen concentration. Close to the face, we have most of the oxygen. And then as you go deeper in by, this is about 300 feet of red zone here, where we have 19-20% oxygen. And as you go deeper into the GOB, like here where it turns from green to blue, we have about 6% oxygen left. So really, as it turns from yellow to green, explosions, methane explosions, would no longer be supported. So really, anything green and blue in this picture, we won't have to worry about anymore in terms of methane explosibility. But in this red and yellow zones, anywhere above 12% methane is explosible. When you look at the methane concentration, that gets the higher the methane is, in this case, it's closer to the tailgate side. This is the headgate, and this is the tailgate side. Near the headgate, you have pretty much all fresh air, but that air pushes the methane towards the tailgate. And then in between, yeah, deep inside the GOB, you have close to 50% methane, but the nice thing is you don't have any oxygen left in that same area, so you don't have to worry about it. But you have to worry about it in this area close to the face, where you have anywhere between 0 and about 10-15% methane in this tailgate area. So what we did in the program is we used a user-defined function in the program to label or to color the explosive areas according to this Coward diagram. Coward diagram is basically showing the explosive area in red, and then in yellow it shows a fuel-rich area that can become explosive if you add oxygen to it, and also in blue and green, various areas that are fuel-lean or that have low methane and low oxygen that typically do not become explosive unless you add methane to it. So when you combine these two graphs and turn them into a color scheme like this, you see that in this area close to the face, you have a fuel-lean or methane-lean situation. There's not enough methane to burn. Now, deeper in, you get the yellow where there's enough methane, but you don't have enough oxygen. And then you may end up with these slivers where you have a red zone and then surrounding it an orange buffer zone where the conditions are close to explosive. You typically find these zones near the tailgate of the longwall, rarely near the headgate because you got fresh air coming in here, but near the tailgate where you have that oxygen mixing with methane coming down from the gob. Now, when you when we looked at these methane zones and methane volumes, we were able to, in this situation, in the final push of this long wall, the mine operator reduced the face ventilation quantity from 70,000 to 40,000 CFM, and therefore we were able to assess what the what's the size of the explosive volume would be at different face ventilation quantities. We also looked at various quantities of nitrogen injection. That mine is set up to inject nitrogen both in the tailgate and the headgate side. And so we were looking at the explosive zone under various nitrogen injection quantities. And then finally, we also looked at different gob caving characteristics, you know, when having the gob cave right after following the long wall versus waiting a few days when full subsidence had set in. And that changed the gob permeability quite a bit. So in this case, our first interesting result wasn't actually a bit surprising result, was that the sliver of explosive zone was larger if we had 70,000 CFM flowing in the face. And actually, if we reduce the face quantity, it's kind of counterintuitive. You would think that if you put more air on the face, you dilute the methane more. But in this case, that leads to a actually increase in potentially explosive zone and actually explosive range of the methane between reducing it from 70,000 to 40,000 CFM, as you see in this graph, gradually reduces the amount of explosive methane here, that red gate. Increasing the phase quantity from 40,000 to 75,000 CFM actually dilutes the methane, so it reduces the methane that we see at the tailgate from 0.5 to about 0.4% or so, but at the same time it increases the relative size of that explosive blob in the gob from 0.4 to almost 0.8, so it doubles the amount of explosive gas in the longwall gob. We also looked at how far the oxygen ingresses into the gob area based on the face quantity. As I said before, if we have 70,000 CFM at the face, the oxygen pushes pretty deep into the gob, even though you see here remains of oxygen about 3.5 to 7%. Now, if we go with a 40,000 CFM, you know, with a reduced phase velocity and phase quantity, that ingress is far less deep into the gob, and we have a reduction below 10% here, that dark blue area here, where really no explosive mixture can be formed anymore. We have that within about 200 feet, about 300 feet in by the face. So again, face quantity, if you reduce the face quantity, you push less oxygen in the gob, and you therefore reduce the amount of explosive gas that forms inside the gob. Looking at nitrogen injection, we had two nitrogen injection points, one at the headgate and one at the tailgate. And the operator varied the quantity for us between about 200 and about 1600 CFM. And again, we could choose what location we wanted the injection at. And again, the purpose here is to minimize the volume of explosive methane air mixture and also to minimize oxygen ingress into the gob. So in comparison, if we pushed 200 CFM of nitrogen both on the headgate and the tailgate side, we have a fairly large block of explosive mixture forming deep in the gob. If we increase the nitrogen to 800 CFM on both the headgate side and the tailgate side, we are left with one tiny little sliver of explosive mixture, in this case, that is almost negligible. So that shows that we can control the formation of these explosive zones inside the gob by varying the amount of nitrogen that we push in. Also, at the same time, nitrogen injected on the headgate side is much more effective. In this case, we injected 800 CFM on the tailgate side, 200 CFM on the headgate side. You see there's a large explosive zone. And if we reverse the injection, same total quantity, but we put instead 800 CFM on the headgate side and 200 CFM on the tailgate side, we were able to largely eliminate that explosive zone. We still have a slight sliver here, and again, there's further studies that are aimed at reducing that to zero. At this point, we weren't able to quite do that yet, but again, we haven't pulled all the stops in terms of varying nitrogen injection and playing the model to its possibilities. This graph again shows the effectiveness of blue shows the effectiveness of tailgate injection. If you increase the amount of nitrogen, you do reduce the nitrogen, the explosive volume somewhat, but there's a limited impact here after about 1,000 or 1,200 CFM. This kind of this curve slopes off, where if we inject nitrogen at the headgate side, we can drop the explosive volume dramatically and therefore expect to manage the explosive concentrations in the gob. Another mine that we're working with is also prone to coal that is extremely prone to spontaneous combustion. And the next couple of slides show that we can also vary the depth of oxygen ingress by increasing nitrogen. In this case, we have no nitrogen on the tailgate, 200 CFM on the headgate. You see you have that critical 14 to 10% oxygen level goes almost, that would be 900, almost 1,000 feet deep into the gob. That means this coal is exposed to oxygen for about 10, 12 days, depending on how long this coal can last under oxygen exposure before it starts catching on fire. That may not be something a mine operator can afford. So when we instead increase the nitrogen only on the headgate side to 800 CFM, we have significantly reduced that oxygen ingress. We now have about 3 days worth of production of gob that is exposed to oxygen, and that can make a big difference in your spawncom management plan. When we doubled the the nitrogen on the headgate, we made it changes things slightly, but not significantly anymore. Same thing if we push nitrogen in from the tailgate, we can push this curve on the tailgate side. We can push the inert side, and that really makes a big difference on the explosive zone, but it doesn't really change the oxygen ingress picture too much. The problem also is if you push too much nitrogen in on the tailgate, you may end up going below 19.5% oxygen on your tailgate side entry, and you may not be able to manage your face air quality properly. Again, this is another picture. I mean, we made some more variations, pushed 1,600 in on the headgate side and 800 on the tailgate side. Again, the picture changes slightly, but it shows that you have to have a minimum of about 800,000 CFM of nitrogen on the head gate side to be effective, and then you end up hitting the point of diminishing returns. In conclusion, we have two major conclusions so far from this project, and there's another year of research in it. So we expect some more conclusions, but what we can say so far is first, increasing the phase methylation quantity pushes the oxygen further into the GARP, and that may increase the volume of explosive gases and also may increase the spontcom tendencies. And injecting nitrogen to inner thighs is most effective from the headgate size, but some nitrogen should also be injected on the tailgate side for control of that explosive volume. The nitrogen will both reduce the explosive gas volume and it also will reduce the spontcom hazard. And that's all I have to say to this. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Have any questions for Jürgen? Let me ask one. The GARP permeability obviously varies with time as you have consolidation. Have you considered different permeabilities as a function of time, or is this basically a steady state model?
Yeah, we haven't been able to consider different permeabilities as a function of time yet. We're still working on that. But so far, what we have done is we varied the permeability that we started with, and we went to 50%, 20%, 10%, and 5% of that. So we varied by a factor of 20 down, and also we went in the other direction. We went twice as much, five times, 10 times, and 20 times the permeability that we started out with. And we found that fundamentally the picture does not change. The fundamental conclusions stay the same, but again, we're still working on getting those time effects. That's fairly complex to do, but we recognize that that's something we have to do. There's very little literature to compare notes to. So it's something we'd love to do, but we haven't gotten to those conclusions yet. We're still working on them.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Thank you.